It's time for episode 546 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes.
Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast that handily survived the Ides of March yet again. Et tu, Dante? I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent, and I am joined across the internet by my good pal, my friend, and Danis himself. Hello, Dan Morin.
It's up to me to point out that Dante is a totally different person, right? That did not murder Julius Caesar, as far as we know.
As far as we know, you know.
That's true.
Who knows
for sure?
You knew
an awful lot about hell, that guy. Maybe, and Brutus is in the last circle. Oh, now we're getting deep. Okay, never mind. I'm going to stop myself right there.
Good. You stop yourself right there while I introduce our two guests who are not in any circle of hell. Instead, are amazing. To my left is the producer and reporter at the Texas Standard, as well as the podcast host of Parallel right here on Relay. It's Shelley Brisbane. Hello, Shelley.
Hi, Micah. I've looked around my podcast closet here, and there are no knives.
The knives are in.
Knives.
And to my left, it is YouTuber and fellow Star Wars enthusiast, Christopher Lawley. Welcome back, Chris.
Hi, I don't have any knives at my desk, but I do have three lightsabers, so do with that what you will.
That murder would have been a lot different. Cleaner, probably.
Certainly cleaner. You know, but then I doubt Julius would have been able to say, or should I call him Julius? It's a first name basis. Caesar wouldn't
you
have
know
been
him
able to.
Well, or
perhaps I am Brutus. Okay, let's just not do that. Let's get into the show. You know how this works. Four topics, 30 minutes. Here's mine for you. What is your main means of searching online? Are you still a Google search user? Do you use AI search? Do you use a few different search tools that are for specific cases and specific parts of the web? Tell us everything. Spill that tea. Shelley, we'll start with you.
Well, I've been a DuckDuckGo user in my personal life for a long time. It does me fine, and I would like to limit my interactions with Google. However, for work purposes, which means the radio show, and I have to search a lot of news really quickly, oftentimes I use Google. So I have different Safari profiles with different search engines. The way I use AI, interestingly enough, is I often need to find experts on a particular topic, and I found AI is really good at hunting up academics who are at least adjacent to the thing I want. So if I need to find somebody who is an expert in federal court litigation, just this morning I needed to do that, I will use ChatGPT and I'll say, you know, to find me a Texas expert in constitutional law. And they don't always hit perfectly, but they at least give me a starting place. But for news, general searches, I do a lot of Google searches during the day. And then when I go home, quote unquote, I'm in DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, the great thing about AI is if it can't find something, it just makes up an expert for you. So
exactly.
It's extra convenient. old habits die hard, which is why I'm an Alta Vista user. No, which is why I'm still using Google, 20 plus years going strong, I guess. But you know what? I'm going to say it. Google kind of stinks now. I've had really bad results trying to find things, especially if you're trying to find something with keywords that, like, maybe something happens and you're like, oh, didn't something like this happen like a few years ago? Good luck, you know, trying to find anything that's not current. I find that a big struggle. I have played around with DuckDuckGo. I had it set up in that feature where in the latest version of Apple's platforms, you can set a different web browser for your private tab group. Like, so if you open private, like browsing, you can have a different search engine than by your default engine. And I find that helpful because sometimes I want to toggle back and forth. And I know Google or DuckDuckGo has the operators where you can like tell it to search Google instead. But like my default is still Google because DuckDuckGo, well, good. I still struggle with finding the breadth of search results that I get with Google. I have not turned to AI for this at all, really. I haven't found that it slots in with the way that I want to do my searching of the web. I guess I'm just boring and sticking with Google. I'd love to use something different and better, but I have yet to find anything that feels like it's conclusively better. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I've got two answers to this, I guess. So the AI answer is I've been using Microsoft Copilot quite a bit, but I mostly use a Safari plugin called XSearch. And what this allows you to do is it allows you to search different platforms by putting like a qualifier letter or word or phrase or something in the front. So like, for example, if you type A and then Velcro straps, it'll search Amazon for Velcro straps. Or if you type Apple and iPad, it'll search Apple's website for iPad. Or you can type G and then something and it'll do a Google search. Or I think D is DuckDuckGo. So I kind of mix it up depending on what I'm asking. You know, for AI stuff, it's typically like specific questions like, what's a good recipe to make pancakes or something like that? But, you know, if I need something to give me a lot of different results, I'll use Google or one of those other tools or something like that.
I also use a tool that's like that. Mine is called Keyword Search. I most often use it when I'm looking for Apple support documents because I do a lot of shows where people are asking questions and I'm trying to provide not just an immediate response, but also some more information they can look into. So I have my little keyword search, and because I'm a text expander user, I kind of have the snippet idea locked in. So I type in semicolon ASUP, ASUP, and then whatever it is that I'm trying to look up, that looks into Apple's support documentation. But I am primarily a Google user still. I do use some of the search operating tools. The big one that I use is Site:. So when I don't have a keyword search set up for a site, I will use that Site:: feature. Or if the site's search stuff is not great, that's for the same thing. And I do increasingly find myself using something like Perplexity and OpenAI's ChatGPT as a way to get information on a specific topic where it's not necessarily something that I'm just trying to find, you know, on the web as a web page. Thank you all for your answers on that. Let us go to our next topic, which comes from Shelley.
So the New York Times recently reported something a lot of us probably already suspect, that cars can track us. They can find out where we've gone and how long we've spent there, and also things like how hard we brake or whether we accelerate too much. And this information is often sold by automakers to insurance companies via services like LexisNexis. And so if that doesn't horrify you enough all by itself, if you didn't happen to check out that article, I'm wondering if you've thought about car privacy at all in your own life, and if you've taken any steps to mitigate what the cars can do in terms of tracking you, or how you understand the results that are out there for your car. Dan,
here's my top tip. This is what I do.
I know what it is.
Do you?
I think
it's have a car that's 12 years old.
Yep, that's what I thought. You were saying. Yeah.
My car has no internet connection. It has no way of, I mean, I'm sure some of these details are recorded and could be pulled from the computer, but you'd have to have somebody actually doing it, you know, physically where the car is. I have in the past, I did it one time, like my insurance company did a pilot where they would send you like a dongle that you plugged into your car and it would record information about your driving and then, you know, use that to potentially get you lower rates. And I think I did that for a little while. Mainly because it was an opt-in thing, right? So I could just be like, I have to go and take a positive action for this thing to come. And I was confident in my safe driving and felt like, okay, if I can save some money, this will be fine with me. I don't love the idea of companies doing this, but at the same time, like, you know, it's a car. It's like, there's a degree of me that thinks it's car insurance, right? Like they are, their whole business is trying to figure out how risky you are in terms of a bet. It's so they can decide, you know, what it costs to have to insure you. So I'm not shocked by it in any way. I do think the idea that they sell these other sources seems to me a little more questionable. I mean, there are a lot of data privacy questions, I assume, in there. But, you know, I think this is unfortunately the way a lot of this stuff is going as our technology gets more and more pervasive and more connected, is that this information is available and somebody somewhere will figure out a way to use it. So, yeah, I don't love it, and I'm sure it's something I'll contend with when I have to eventually buy a new car. But you know, I'm also, maybe I'm just too jaded and cynical about it. Like, yeah, it's kind of the way the world's going. Chris,
last year I got what I call my realistic dream car. So it is a newer car. It's Mustang GT. I absolutely love it, and my car loves me and would never snitch on me. But realistically, I think I lucked out here. So as we all know, we came off of a major chip shortage, and part of that chip shortage is I'm missing two features in my car. One, the built-in garage door opener, and the other one is the LTE connection. So I'm wondering if my car can even snitch on me, but as I'm saying that, I remember my car pairs to my home Wi-Fi, so it probably could. But I honestly want to dig into this a little more, because I'm kind of curious, because my car is designed to be taken to a racetrack and driven on a racetrack. So would it snitch on me? Is that built into it? Because there's different modes it can be in. Does it not snitch when it's in track mode? I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I'm not surprised this is happening at all. We all know there was like the health insurance company thing that was like, we're going to send you an Apple Watch and have our app on it, and you can get lower health insurance rates if you're healthy and stuff like that. So I'm kind of curious if my car does this. This is something I'm going to dig into more. And if it does do this, I might be changing my Wi-Fi password so it can't connect to the Wi-Fi anymore.
A lot of this comes from the app connectivity that a lot of these modern cars have. And so that data gets transferred to and from the app. The app then uploads that data to the LexisNexis and other places. So there are a few things here. First and foremost, like Dan, I drive a car that's older. Mine's from 2014. And so that helps. But another thing you can do is you can actually go to the LexisNexis website, and there are about like five or six different further links from that website. There's a down at the very bottom of the page, there's a consumer login option. From there, you can try to get access to your own data and opt out / lock down a lot of your profile, which is helpful. Again, that's only one data broker, though. Big problem, though, here is, yes, a lot of this gets hidden behind other features. So you think that you're just saying, oh, yeah, I'd love to have the free roadside assistance. But then along with that comes this driver score. My partner actually did that dongle thing that Dan was talking about. And it also would determine how often you turned on and off your vehicle. And so he would find himself needing to keep his car on in order to not get dinged, because it wasn't paying attention to it. Basically, every time you turned your car on and off, that was a use of the car. But if you go to the grocery store and you go inside and you come back out and then you go home versus, you know, the car sitting overnight and then being used, there's a lot of data there that they didn't do a good job of parsing through. And in almost every case, according to this New York Times piece, these programs were about making you pay more money, more so than they ever were saving you money. So it's very frustrating. But yeah, that's kind of how I've minimized things, by just not having a car that can do it, but also being very aware of what systems are behind the scenes that are opting into it. Shelley, why don't you round us out here?
This became an issue in our house when we traded in a 16-year-old car for a brand new car. Her name is Carmen Kia, and she has all the tech. And in fact, she is one of the Kia is one of the companies, along with GM, but there certainly are others, who are encouraging their customers to opt into this data. Instead of using a dongle, they gamify this input so that your supposed incentive is that if you drive, it will help you drive better. And that theoretically, if you drive better, that could reduce your rates. But as Michael was saying, what the Times found was that this data was often being used to provide a justification for increasing rates, and that customers didn't know that was happening until they got their LexisNexis reports, and they didn't have any ability to determine whether the basis on which the data was used to change rates was accurate or not, because simply hard braking or turning in a certain way or whatever is not a slam dunk that you're behaving in a bad way as far as a driver is concerned. I talked to my husband, who has been driving Carmen around, and he says he gets these occasional collision warnings when he's coming up to another car that's turning. And so he's not in danger of a collision. It just looks as if he is, because he's very close to the other car. And so how is that impacting his insurance rates? In addition to what Micah said about getting your own LexisNexis data, you can can go to a site called vehicleprivacyreport.com and enter your VIN number and find out what data your car is collecting. You can also search for your car and privacy policy and find out something, although the Times says that's fairly tricky in terms you can't just necessarily get information that says your car is not collecting data, because you might have to go two or three levels deep to find out that the car might not be collecting data of a certain type, but it's still possible that it's selling it to the insurance company indirectly through LexisNexis or another data broker. Also, those connected apps that Michael was talking about are potentially a way for you to turn off some of the data collection. But I took a look in the Kia app this morning, and it's not apparent. I know the name of the Kia function that this is supposed to be part of, called Driver Score. But I think I'm actually going to have to go and sit in the car and find where that is, because that's not available in the app. So the fact that it's not in the app doesn't necessarily mean that your data is not being collected.
And with that, we have reached halftime here on Clockwise, which is a perfect time to tell you about the Clockwise swag. Swag, of course, stands for stuff we all get. And what you should get is a shirt, a hat, or a phone case from us, Clockwise folks. You can head to clockwise.social to find links to our shirt, our hat, and our phone case, as well as, of course, our podcast. The shirt is so soft, so wonderful. The hat, I wear it all the time. It's like
Mike,
my
I'm
favorite
wearing my shirt
now.
Today. I just realized.
Nice. Yeah. These are so soft, lovely shirts. And I'm almost always wearing my hat if I'm not at work. I really like my Clockwise hat. It's embroidered. It's not just printed on the front of the hat, the Clockwise logo. Very cool stuff. Again, available at clockwise.social. And when you buy that stuff, not only are you representing us out in the world, but you are also helping to support the work we do here on Clockwise, particularly when the ad schedule is running low. And we still
I feel
need
like
to...
we're doing one of those PBS fundraiser. Like, I turned on my news station this morning and they were doing their fun drive. I feel like we're doing that a little bit. You can get a lovely tote bag. No,
yeah,
not
exactly.
Yet, but maybe soon.
Maybe
soon.
There will be a tote bag. But
we just finished our fun drive.
There you go. It helps us pay the Zoom bill. That's what's most important. So help us keep doing this show by getting some Clockwise swag. All right. We are back from halftime, and that means it's time for Dan's topic.
All right. Well, we briefly touched on AI in that search question, but there's a news story this week saying that Apple is discussing integrating AI from vendors like either Google or OpenAI or some other vendors in its upcoming platform updates. And we've heard obviously a lot about Apple building in sort of generative AI features. So my question for you is, are there generative AI features that you would realistically like to see come to Apple's platforms this year? Let's start with you, Chris.
Yeah, as far as generative AI, I think the most interesting thing Apple could do is have AI build shortcuts for you automatically in the background. A lot of people have talked about how the barrier to entry with shortcuts is being able to build them. You know, I have a shortcuts gallery. I know a friend of the show, Matthew Casinelli, the Mac Stories team, everyone's got a shortcuts gallery. But a lot of people really want specific shortcuts that aren't in those galleries. So the ability to type into something like Spotlight or ask assistant that I don't want to say the phrase and trigger everyone's devices for, to build a shortcut that can, you know, add items to a grocery list or, you know, set up a laundry timer or all sorts of different things, I think could be really interesting.
I agree. Oftentimes we'll find myself, for example, on this show, we were just talking this morning about how we have the names of guests, and these guests have been on the show in the past. And when they've been on the show in the past, their titles have been included in the document. If I could ask Google in this example to, hey, I regularly book these guests and their title remains the same. When I create a new spreadsheet and I put their name here, go find their title and put it here because you have that information. And I was thinking how it would be so cool if Google's AI did that. I want the same thing on macOS. So basically what Christopher is talking about, creating shortcuts, any kind of automation stuff that could happen on my Mac. Frankly, just having the generative AI functionality and features touching the operating system as opposed to being so far away from it would be handy. The other thing I'd love to see is Gen AI used with Memoji, because I think I would use them more. That's one of the things I really like about Bitmoji and have for so long, is that there are so many different options for Bitmoji. And so you have these like happy birthday messages you can send, and you can even type in certain words and it will add them to an image of a Bitmoji. Do that with Memoji. Make Memoji able to generate things on the fly based on the conversation I'm having. So cool. Shelley, what are your thoughts?
So AI is already doing so much in terms of accessibility and helping people identify what is actually happening in images, or taking large chunks of text and finding the bits that you actually want. So if you have a box for a food item and you want to actually just know how to make it, you can point it at, you can point your phone at the box and say, tell me how to make this, with apps that already exist, like Beam AI. I would love some of that in the operating system, at the risk of Sherlocking some really great apps. I think the opportunity for accessibility to point your camera at something in your environment and have it interpreted for you and described in detail is kind of awesome. And obviously people should learn, know not to trust that stuff completely, but it's a starting place. And your talk about Memojis, Mike, made me think of one that I really want. I often want to use an emoji, but my vision is such that I don't always know which is the right one. 8 different colors of hearts does not help me. So I'd like to type a message and ask AI to tell me what emoji is appropriate, and then let me decide whether I agree with that or not. But is it a blue heart? Is it a red heart? Is it 2 sparkling hearts? I have no idea, and I need some help.
These are all great features. I think there's a lot of possibility, and I'm looking forward to Apple. I'm hopeful that they're ambitious about this and that they're really trying it. I realize AI is like a buzzword everybody likes to throw around now, but I think there are legitimate great uses for it, as you've all pointed out, and I hope they sort of can bring some sanity to that discussion of like, here are things that AI is actually useful for. For me, a couple things that I thought about. One, obviously, photos. Google has had a good leg up on Apple when it comes to using AI to improve photos. Apple obviously uses machine learning in its photo capture and everything, but when it comes to editing, they don't have the ability to do things like, hey, I want to remove that person who walked through this really nice photo of me, or I want to fix this one thing in this image that stands out. And that is one place that AI is pretty good at being able to make that look seamless. Another for me is like, I would love the AI, you know, there's a broader conversation, obviously, about Siri and AI like features there and making it more conversational and things like that, which I think is great. But I would love the sort of assistant thing to become a reality. Like, you know, I get 20 emails and I just want it to tell me, like, give me summaries of like the emails I got, and like, let me quickly skim through and see like which ones I actually want to read or not. A lot of places like that where I feel like you could digest information that I have on my computer and quickly and easily give me sort of the bullet points or what have you. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for Siri to really take on a more assistant-like role, kind of what we always had imagined for it, but that never really came to fruition. But thank you all for your thoughts on that. Let's go to our final topic, which comes from Chris.
New iPads are right around the corner. Apple comes to you and says you can add any feature you want. What feature are you adding to an iPad?
I think I want 2 or more cameras on the front of the device. And the reason I want that is because no matter what orientation and no matter how I'm holding my iPad, I want to be able to unlock the stupid thing. And occasionally when I'm using an iPad that has Face ID, because it's the iPad that I have that has Face ID, it's a 12.9-inch iPad. So it's a big honking iPad. And so if I'm holding it and covering the stupid camera and the Face ID module, maybe I don't need 2 cameras, but I just need 2 Face ID modules in there. Give me one on the landscape side and one on the portrait side, and I'd be a happy camper. And I'm going to leave it at that because that's already adding so much cost to the iPad. Shelley, what about you?
Well, I want something I'm almost certain not to get, which is I want a 12.9-inch iPad Air. The iPad Pro has been 12.9 for a long time. It's the most expensive iPad. One of the big features that's rumored to be coming is OLED displays, which is not going to make those 12.9-inch iPad Pros any cheaper. But I use every square inch of that 12.9 inches on my iPad Pro because I use my device as a teleprompter. I use it to gather and process news when I don't have my Mac or when it's inconvenient. to use my Mac. So I want a really big screen. It doesn't have to be OLED. The iPad Air is right in the middle of the line. All those chips are really fast. So give me that. I don't think other than that, there's a lot missing from the existing iPad. I, unlike a lot of other people, don't feel like Apple has ignored the iPad or that there are things missing. I think the iPad is just fine. I would just like a bigger one in the middle of the product line, please.
A second port. It's nice to be able to power it, you know, and if you use the Magic Keyboard, obviously you can plug it in and use that port for something else. But I still feel as though there are a lot of times where a second port would be handy, whether, you know, presumably a USB-C / Thunderbolt port. I think it's one of those things that, like, I don't plug in a lot into the iPad oftentimes, but sometimes I do run into the issue where it's like, oh, I need power and I need a microphone or something like that. And this is just purely hardware stuff. There's definitely software stuff on my list. But like, that's one. And then to sort of possibly like different version of that, MagSafe. I do like MagSafe a lot. I'm kind of curious to see how they would implement it in an iPad, but I feel like that's another way to potentially free up a port is if you can get power through another means. So there's my two for you, Chris. What do you got for us to wrap us up?
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to break the premise of my own question. I've got two. First off, the thing that I'm looking for the most when new iPads are announced, whether it's next week or next month or whenever they're coming, is better battery life. That is the thing that the iPad is. I mean, that's the reason why a lot of us people went and started working from the iPad was because we got so tired of the MacBook Pro's battery life back on the Intel days. But now the Macs have amazing battery life, and us iPad people are like, we're still sitting at 10 hours here? Come on. So I'm hoping for a better battery life, but my out of the park, you know, weird answer is going to be a folding iPad, but you're going to have to hear me out on this one. So it opens up to like a 15 or 16 inch iPad when it's fully opened up, and then it can fold, you know, in taco wise, and you can hold it like a normal tablet. But when it opens up, it then docks with like an old, I don't know if you guys remember the Surface Pro, but it was one of those tablet keyboards that the keyboard attached on the bottom, and it just looked like a regular laptop. And in the keyboard part of it, it had extra battery life and extra GPU. So I kind of am breaking my own premise and just redesigning a whole iPad line, like, or a whole new iPad. But yeah, that's my out of the park one, is a folding iPad with like a weird keyboard that opens up all the way and basically makes it a laptop when you wanted a laptop, but then you could fold it closed and have a normal tablet.
Sounds like Microsoft.
Yes, but I don't want Windows. Microsoft and I are still on a break.
Alrighty, folks. With that, we have reached nearly the end of this episode of Clockwise. We do have time for a bonus topic. My question for you is this. How appropriate. Do you have any pets? And what kind are the pets that you have? And what is or are their names? Shelley, we'll start with you.
Micah, I have two geriatric tabby cats. One is orange and his name is Jack, and the other is a cream tabby and his name is Norbert.
I've got a very enthusiastic 20-month-old. Nope, that's a toddler. Never mind. I don't have any pets, but I did have a pet frog when I was growing up that lived an insanely long time, like over 10 years.
So I don't have any pets right now. My girlfriend does have a cat, but we are starting the discussions of getting a dog, and she has wanted a golden retriever her whole life. So I get to pick the name, and the name will be Chewbacca.
That's pretty incredible. Many people know I have two dogs, Mizzy, M-I-Z-Z-Y, not Mitzi, Mizzy, who is a fox terrier chihuahua mix, and Henry, who is just a straight up chihuahua, although most of the time he's just like a loaf of bread who sits there. Both of them are amazing and adorable, and I love them. All right. Folks, if you out there would like to get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. You just head to relay.fm/clockwise, sign up for $7 a month, $70 per year, and you will help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we discuss a topic from member Aaron. And with that, we have reached the end of this episode of Clockwise. All that is left is to thank our wonderful guests, Shelley Brisbane. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And Christopher Lawley, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
And Michael will be back next week where no murders will have taken place, hopefully. sorry, that was a callback to the Emu show, which is so long ago that I forgot.
Never forget.
But thank you. Thank you, everybody out there, for joining us. And until next time, we remind you, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Or else a bunch of Romans might try to kill you. No.
Bye, everybody.